Message saying she was in Florida but would return calls soon. Pam, who was no longer in Florida, but who might be lying dead on her kitchen floor with Tom Riley next to her, just as dead. This vision was so clear I could see blood on the cabinets and on the knife in Tom's stiffening hand. One ring. Two. Three. The next would kick the answering machine into life. Hello? It was Pam. She sounded breathless. Pam! I shouted, Jesus Christ, is it actually you? Answer me. Edgar, who told you? She sounded totally bewildered and still breathless. Or maybe not, that was a Pam voice I knew, slightly foggy, the way she sounded when she had a cold or when she was... Pam, are you crying? And then belatedly, told me what? About Tom Riley, she said. I thought you might be his brother or, please, God, no, his mother. What about Tom? He was fine on the trip back, she said, laughing and showing off his new sketch, playing cards in the back of the plane with Cayman and some of the others. Now she did start to cry, big sobs like static, her words coming in between. It was an ugly sound, but it was also beautiful because it was alive. He was fine. Then tonight he killed himself. The papers will probably call it an accident, but it was suicide. That's what Bosie says. Bosie has a friend on the cops who called and told him. And then he called me. Tom drove into a retaining wall at 70 miles an hour or more. No skid marks. This was on Route 23, which means he was probably on his way here. I understood everything, and I didn't need any phantom arm to tell me either. There was something Percy wanted, because she was angry with me. Angry. Furious. Only Tom had had a moment of sanity, a moment of courage, and had taken a quick detour into a concrete cliff. Wireman was making crazy what's-going-on gestures in front of my face. I turned away from him. Panda, he saved your life. What? I know what I know, I said. The sketch he was showing off in the plane. It was one of mine, right? Yes. He was so proud. Edgar, what are you... Did it have a name? Did the sketch have a name? Do you know? It was called Hello. He kept saying, don't look much like Minnesota Dare, doing that dumb Youper thing of his. A pause, and I didn't break in because I was trying to think, then. This is your special kind of knowing, isn't it? Hello, I was thinking. Yes, of course. The first sketch I'd done in Big Pink had also been one of the powerful ones, and Tom had bought it. Goddamned Hello. Wireman took the phone from me, gently but firmly. Pam, it's Wireman. Is Tom Riley? He listened, nodding. His voice was very calm, very soothing. It was a voice I'd heard him use with Elizabeth. All right, yes, yes. Edgar's fine, I'm fine. We're all fine down here. Sorry about Mr. Riley, of course. Only you need to do something for us, and it's extremely important. I'm going to put you on speaker. He pushed a button I hadn't even noticed before. Are you still there? Yes. Her voice was tinny but clear, and she was getting herself under control. How many of Edgar's family and friends bought pictures? She considered. Nobody in the families bought any of the actual paintings, I'm sure of that. I breathed a sigh of relief. I think they were sort of hoping, or maybe expecting's the word, that in time, on the right birthday, or maybe at Christmas... I understand, so they didn't get anything. I didn't say that. Melinda's boyfriend also bought one of the sketches. What's this about? What's wrong with the pictures? Rick. My heart jumped. Pam, this is Edgar. Did Melinda and Rick take the sketch with them? With all those airplanes, including transatlantic? He asked that it be framed and shipped. I don't think she knows. It was of flowers done in colored pencils. So that one's still at the Skodo? Yes. And you're sure nobody else in the family bought paintings? She took maybe 10 seconds to consider. It was agony. At last she said, no, I'm positive. You better be, Panda, I thought. But Angel and Helen Slobotnik bought one. Mailbox with Flowers, I believe it's called. I knew the one she was talking about. It was actually titled Mailbox with Ox Eyes. And I thought that one was harmless. I thought that one was probably all mine, but still, they didn't take it, did they? No, because they were going to Orlando first, fly home from there. They also asked that it be framed and shipped. No questions now, only answers. She sounded younger, like the Pam I had married, the one who kept my books back in those pre-Tom days. Your surgeon. Can't remember his name. Todd Jameson. I said it automatically. If I'd paused to think, I wouldn't have been able to remember. Yes, him. He also bought a painting and arranged for shipment. He wanted one of those spooky girl and ship ones, but they were spoken for. He settled for a conch shell floating on the water. Which could be trouble. All the surreal ones could be trouble. Bosey bought two of the sketches and Kamen bought one. Kathy Green wanted one but said she couldn't afford it. A pause. I thought her husband was sort of a dork. I would have given her one if she'd asked, I thought. Wireman spoke up again. Listen to me now, Pam. You've got work to do. All right. A little fog still in her voice, but mostly sharp. Mostly right there. You need to call Bozeman and Kamen. Do it right away. Okay. Tell them to burn those sketches. A slight pause, then, burn the sketches. Okay, got it. As soon as we're off the phone, I put in. A touch of annoyance. I said I got that, Eddie. Tell them I'll reimburse them their purchase price times two, or give them different sketches, whichever they want. But that those sketches aren't safe. They are not safe. Have you got that? Yep, I'll do it right now. And she finally asked a question. The question. Eddie, did that hello picture kill Tom? Yes. I need a call back. I gave her the phone number. Pam sounded like she was crying again, but still repeated it back perfectly. Pam, thank you, Wireman said. Yeah, Jack added. Thanks, Mrs. Fremantle. I thought she'd ask who that was, but she didn't. Edgar, do you promise the girls will be okay? If they didn't take any of my pictures with them, they'll be fine. Yes, she said. Your goddamn pictures. I'll call back. And she was gone, without a goodbye. Better? Wireman asked when I hung up. I don't know, I said. I hope to God it is. I pressed the heel of my hand first against my left eye, then against my right. But it doesn't feel better. It doesn't feel fixed. 13. We were quiet for a minute, then Wireman asked, was Elizabeth falling out of that pony trap really an accident? What's your best guess? I tried to clear my mind. This stuff was important, too. My best guess is that it was. When she woke up, she suffered from amnesia, aphasia, and God knows what else, as a result of brain injuries that were beyond diagnosis in 1925. Painting was more than her therapy. She was a genuine prodigy, and she was her own first great artwork. The housekeeper, Nan Melda, was also amazed. There was that story in the paper, and presumably everyone who read it was amazed over breakfast, but you know how people are. What amazes you at breakfast is forgotten by lunch, Wireman said. Jesus, Jack said. If I'm as cynical as you two when I get old, I think I'll turn in my badge. That's Jesus Crispies to you, son, Wireman said and actually laughed. It was a stunned sound, but there, and that was good. Everyone's interest began to wane, I said. And that was probably true for Elizabeth as well. I mean, who gets bored quicker than a 3-year-old? Only puppies and parakeets, Wireman said. A creative burn at 3. Jack said, bemused. Fucking awesome concept. So she started to... I stopped, for a moment, unable to go on. Edgar? Wireman asked quietly. All right? I wasn't, but I had to be. If I wasn't, Tom would only be the beginning. It's just that he looked good at the gallery. Good, you know, like he put it all together again. If not for her meddling. I know. Wireman said, drink some of your water, muchacho. I drank some of my water and forced myself back to the business at hand. She started to experiment. She went from pencils to finger paints to watercolors in, I think, a period of weeks. Plus, some of the pictures in the picnic basket were done in fountain pen, and I'm pretty sure some were done with house paint, which I'd been meaning to try myself. It has a look when it dries. Save it for your art class, muchacho, Wireman said. Yeah, yeah. I drank some more water. I was starting to get back on track. She started to experiment with different media, too, if that's the right word. I think it is. Chalk on brick, sand drawings on the beach, One day she painted Tessie's face on the kitchen counter in melted ice cream. Jack was leaning forward, hands clasped between his muscular thighs, frowning. "Edgar, this isn't just blue sky. You saw this?" "In a way. Sometimes it was actual seeing. Sometimes it was more like a wave that came out of her pictures and from using her pencils. But you know it's true."
"I know."
"She didn't care if the pictures lasted or not?" Wireman asked. "No, the doing mattered more. She experimented with media, and then she started to experiment with reality, to change it, and that's when Percy heard her, I think. When she started messing with reality. Heard her and woke up and started calling." "Percy was with the rest of that junk Eastlake found, wasn't she?" Wireman asked. "Elizabeth thought it was a doll, the best doll ever. But they couldn't be together until she was strong enough."
"Which she are you talking about?" Jack asked.
"Percy or the little girl?"
"Probably both. Elizabeth was just a kid, and Percy had been asleep for a long time, sleeping under the sand, full fathom five."
"Very poetic," Jack said, "but I don't know exactly what you're talking about."
"Neither do I said, "because her, I don't see. If Elizabeth drew pictures of Percy, she destroyed them. I find it suggestive that she turned to collecting china figures in her old age, but maybe that's just a coincidence. What I know is that Percy established a line of communication with the child, first through her drawings, then through her up-to-then favorite doll, Noveen. And Percy instituted a kind of, well, exercise program. I don't know what else you'd call it. She persuaded Elizabeth to draw things, and those things would happen in the real world."
"She's been playing the same game with you, then," Jack said.
"Candy Brown."
"And my eye," Wireman said. "Don't forget fixing my eye."
"I'd like to think that was all me," I said, "but
had it been?"
"There have been other things, though. Small things, mostly. Using some of my pictures as a crystal ball." I trailed off. I didn't really want to go there, because that road led back to Tom. Tom, who should have been fixed.
"Tell us the rest of what you found out from her pictures," Wireman said.
"All right. Start with that out-of-season hurricane. Elizabeth summoned it up, probably with help from Percy."
"You've got to be shitting me," Jack said.
"Percy told Elizabeth where the debris was, and Elizabeth told her father. Among the litter was a, let's say there was a china figure, maybe a foot high, of a beautiful woman."
"Yes, I could see that. Not the details, but the figure. And the empty, pupilless pearls that were her eyes. It was Elizabeth's prize, her fair salvage, and once it was out of the water, it really went to work."
Jack spoke very softly.
"Where would a thing like that have come from to begin with, Edgar?"
A phrase rose to my lips, from where I don't know, only that it wasn't my own. There were elder gods in those days, kings and queens they were. I didn't say it. I didn't want to hear it, not even in that well-lighted room. So I only shook my head.
"I don't know. And I don't know what country's flag that ship might have been flying when it blew in here. Maybe scraping its hull open on the top of Kitt Reef and spilling some of its cargo. I don't know much of anything, for sure. But I think that Percy has a ship of her own. And once she was free of the water and completely welded to Elizabeth Eastlake's powerful child's mind, she was able to call it."
"A ship of the dead," Wireman said.
His face was childlike with fear and wonder. Outside, a wind shook the massed foliage in the courtyard. The rhododendrons nodded their heads, and we could hear the steady, sleepy sound of the waves pounding the shore. I had loved that sound ever since coming to Dumaquee, and I still loved it. But now it frightened me, too.
"A ship called what? Persephone?"
"If you like," I said. It certainly crossed my mind that Percy was Elizabeth's way of trying to say that.
"Doesn't matter. We're not talking Greek mythology here. We're talking about something far older and more monstrous. Hungry, too. That much it does have in common with vampires. Only hungry for souls, not blood. At least that's what I think. Elizabeth had her new doll for no more than a month, and God knows what life was like at the first heron's roost during that time, but it couldn't have been good.
Did Eastlake have the silver harpoons made then?"
Wireman asked. I can't tell you. There's so much I don't know because what I do know comes from Elizabeth, and she was little more than an infant. I have no sense of what happened in her other life, because by then she'd quit drawing. And if she remembered the time when she did, she was doing her best to forget it, Jack finished. Wireman looked glum. By the end, she was well on her way to forgetting everything. I said, remember the pictures where everybody seems to be wearing these big, loopy, drug-addict grins? That was Elizabeth trying to remake the world she remembered, the pre-Percy world, a happier one. In the days before her twin sisters drowned, she was one scared kid. But she was afraid to say anything because she felt that the things going wrong were all her fault. What things? It was Jack. I don't know exactly, but there's one picture of an old-timey Negro lawn jockey standing on his head, and I think that stands for everything. I think that for Elizabeth, in those last days, everything seemed to be standing on its head. There was more than that to the lawn jockey, I was almost positive, but I didn't know what, and this probably wasn't the time to chase after it anyway. I think in the days before and just after Tessie and Laura drowned, the family might almost have been prisoners at Heron's Roost. And only Elizabeth would have known why? Wireman asked. I don't know, I shrugged. Nan Melda might have known some of it, probably knew some of it. Who was at that house during the period after the treasure find and before the drownings? Jack asked. I thought about it. I suppose Maria and Hannah might have come home from school for a weekend or two, and Eastlake could have been away on business for part of March and April. The ones who were surely there that whole time were Elizabeth, Tessie, Laura, and Nan Melda. And Elizabeth tried to draw her new friend out of existence. I licked my lips. They were very dry. She did it with her colored pencils, the ones in the basket. This was just before Tessie and Laura drowned, maybe the night before. Because their drownings were punishment, right? The way Tom killing Pam was supposed to be my punishment for prying. I mean, you see that? Christ almighty, Jack whispered. Wireman was very pale. Until then, I don't think Elizabeth understood. I thought about this, then shrugged. Hell, I can't remember how much I understood when I was 4. But until then, probably the worst thing that had ever happened to her in her life, other than falling out of that pony trap, and I'll bet she didn't even remember that, was getting turned over her daddy's knee and paddled, or having her hand slapped for trying to take one of Nan Melda's jam tarts before they were cooled. What did she know about the nature of evil? All she knew was that Percy was naughty. Percy was a bad doll instead of a good doll. She was out of control and getting out of control all the time. She had to be sent away. So Libet sat down with her pencils and some drawing paper and told herself, I can do this. If I go slow and do my best work, I can do this. I stopped and passed my hand over my eyes. I think that's right, but you have to take it with a grain of salt. It could be mixed up with what I remember about myself. My mind playing more tricks, more stupid fucking pet tricks. Take it easy, muchacho, Wireman said. Go slow. She tried to draw Percy out of existence. How does one do a thing like that? Draw, then erase. Percy didn't let her? Percy didn't know. I'm almost sure of it. Because Elizabeth was able to hide what she meant to do. If you ask me how, I can't tell you. If you ask me if it was her own idea, something she thought up by herself at the age of 4. Not beyond belief, Wireman said. In a way, it's 4-year-old thinking. I don't understand how she could have kept it from this Percy, Jack said. I mean, a little kid? I don't know either, I said. In any case, it didn't work, Wireman said. No, it didn't. I think she made the drawing, and I'm sure she did it in pencil, and I think when she was done, she erased the whole thing. It probably would have killed a human being the way I killed Candy Brown, but Percy wasn't human. All it did was make her angry. She paid Elizabeth back by taking the twins, whom she idolized. Tessie and Laura didn't go down that path to the Shade Beach looking for more treasure. They were driven. They ended up in the water, and they were lost. Only not for good, Wireman said, and I knew he was thinking of certain small footprints, not to mention the thing that had been in my kitchen. No, I agreed. not for good. The wind blew again, this time hard enough to send something thudding against the gulf side of the house. We all jumped.
"How did it get this Emery Paulson?" Jack asked.
"I don't know," I said.
"And Adriana,"
Wireman said. "Did Percy get her, too?"
"I don't know," I said. "Maybe."
Reluctantly, I added, "Probably."
"We haven't seen Adriana," Wireman said. "There's that."
"Not yet," I said.
"But the little girl's drowned," Jack said, like he was trying to get it straight. "This Percy thing lured them into the water, or something."
"Yes," I said, "or something. But then there was a search, outsiders."
"There had to be, Jack," Wireman said. "People knew they were gone, Shannington for one."
"I know that," Jack said. "That's what I'm saying. So Elizabeth and her dad and the housekeeper just dummied up?"
"What other choice?" I asked. "Was John Eastlake going to tell 40 or 50 volunteers, 'The boogie lady took my daughters, look for the boogie lady'? He might not even have known. Although he must have found out at some point." I was thinking of the picture of him screaming, screaming and bleeding.
"What other choice covers it for me?" Wireman said. "I want to know what happened after the search was over. Just before she died, Miss Eastlake said something about drowning her back to sleep. Did she mean Percy? And if she did, how does a thing like that work?"
I shook my head. "Don't know."
"Why don't you know?"
"Because the rest of the answers are on the south end of the island," I said, "at whatever's left of the original Heron's Roost. And I think that's where Percy is, too."
"All right, then," Wireman said. "Unless we're prepared to vacate Duma post haste, it seems to me that we ought to go there."
"Based on what happened to Tom, we don't even have that choice," I said. "I sold a lot of paintings, and the guys at the Scoto won't hold them forever."
"Buy them back," Jack suggested. Not that I hadn't already thought of that myself.
Wireman shook his head.
"Plenty of the owners won't want to sell, not even at twice the price, and a story like this wouldn't convince them."
To this, no one said anything.
"But she's not quite as strong in daylight," I said.
"I'd suggest 9 o'clock.
"Fine by me," Jack said and stood up. "I'll be here at 1/4 of. Right now I'm going back across the bridge to Sarasota."
The bridge. That started an idea knocking around in my head.
"You're welcome to stay here," Wireman said.
"After this conversation?" Jack raised his eyebrows.
"With all due respect, dude,
no way. But I'll be here tomorrow."
"Long pants and boots are the order of the day," Wireman said. "It'll be overgrown down there, and there could be snakes."
He scrubbed a hand up the side of his face.
"Looks like I might be missing tomorrow's viewing at Abbott Wexler. Miss Eastlake's relatives will have to bare their teeth at each other. What a pity.
Hey, Jack."
Jack had started for the door, now he turned back. "You don't happen to have any of Edgar's art, do you?"
Well.
"Fess up, compañero."
"One sketch," Jack said.
He shuffled his feet, and I thought he was blushing.
"Pen and ink. On the back of an envelope. A palm tree. I fished it out of the trash basket one day. Sorry, Edgar, my bad."
"It's okay. But burn it," I said. "Maybe I'll be able to give you another one when all this is over."
"If it ever is," I thought, but didn't add.
Jack nodded.
"Okay. You want to ride back to Big Pink?"
"I'll stay here with Wireman," I said. "But I do want to go back to Big Pink first."
"Don't tell me," Jack said. "Jammies and a toothbrush?"
"No," I said. "Picnic basket and those silver harp..." The telephone rang, and we all looked at each other. I think I knew right away that it was bad news. I felt that sinking as my stomach turned into an elevator. It rang again. I looked at Wireman, but Wireman just looked at me. He knew, too. I picked it up.
"It's me."
Pam, heavy-voiced.
"Brace yourself, Edgar."
When someone says something like that, you always try to fasten some kind of mental safety belt, but it rarely works. Most people don't have one.
"Spill it."
"I got Bosey at home and told him what you said. He started asking questions, which was no surprise, but I told him I was in a hurry and didn't have any answers anyway, so, short form, he agreed to do as you asked. For old time's sake," he said. That sinking sensation was getting worse. After that, I tried Ilsa. I wasn't sure I'd reach her, but she just got in. She sounded tired, but she's back. She's okay. I'll check on Linny tomorrow when... Pam, I'm getting to it. After Illy, I called Cayman. Someone answered on the second or third ring, and I started my spiel. I thought I was talking to him. She paused. It was his brother. He said Cayman stopped in Starbucks for a latte on his way back from the airport. He had a heart attack while he was waiting in line. The EMTs transported him to the hospital, but it was only a formality. The brother said Cayman was DRT, dead right there. He asked me why I was calling, and I said it didn't matter now. Was that all right? Yes. I didn't think Cayman's sketch would have any effect on the brother, or anyone else. I thought its work was done. Thank you. If it's any consolation, it could have been a coincidence. He was a hell of a nice guy, but he was also packing a lot of extra pounds. Anyone who looked at him could see that. You could be right. Although, I knew she wasn't. I'll talk to you soon. All right. She hesitated. Take care of yourself, Eddie. You too. Lock your doors at night and set the alarm. I always do. She broke the connection. On the other side of the house, the surf was disputing with the night. My right arm was itching. I thought, if I could get at you, I believe I'd cut you off all over again. Partly to stop the damage you could do, but mostly just to shut you up. But of course it wasn't my gone arm, or the hand which had once lived at the end of it, that was the problem. The problem was the woman thing in the red robe, using me like some kind of fucked up Ouija board. What? Wireman asked. Don't keep us in suspense, muchacho, what? Cayman, I said. Heart attack. Dead. I thought of all the pictures stored at the Skodo, pictures that were sold. They'd be safe for a little while where they were, but in the end, money talks and bullshit walks. That wasn't even a man law, that was the motherfucking American way. Come on, Edgar, Jack said. I'll run you to your place and then drive you back here. 14. I won't say our trip upstairs to Little Pink was exactly serene. I had the silver candlestick and carried it at port arms all the time we were inside. But it was uneventful. The only spirits in the place were the agitated voices of the shells. I put the drawings back in the red picnic basket. Jack snagged the handles and carried it downstairs. I had his back the whole way and locked Big Pink's door behind us. Much good that would do. While we were riding back to El Palacio, a thought occurred to me. Or recurred. I'd left my digital Nikon behind and didn't want to go back for it, but... Jack, do you have a Polaroid camera? Sure, he said. A one-shot. It's what my dad calls old but serviceable. Why? When you come tomorrow, I want you to stop for a while on the Casey Key side of the drawbridge. Take a few Polaroids of the birds and the boats, okay? Okay. And sneak in a couple of the drawbridge itself, especially the lifting machinery. Why? What do you want them for? I'm going to sketch the drawbridge with the machinery gone, I said. And I'm going to do it when I hear the horn that means it's up to let a boat go through. I don't think the motor and the hydraulics will really disappear, but with luck, I can fuck it up badly enough to keep everybody off for a while. Car traffic, anyway. Are you serious? You really think you can sabotage the bridge? Given how often it breaks down on its own, that should be easy. I looked again at the dark water and thought of Tom Riley, who should have been fixed. Who had been fixed, damn it. I only wish I could draw myself a good night's sleep. How to draw a picture. 9. Look for the picture inside the picture. It's not always easy to see, but it's always there. And if you miss it, you can miss the world. I know that better than anyone. Because when I looked at the picture of Carson Jones and my daughter, of Smiley and his pumpkin, I thought I knew what I was looking for, and missed the truth. Because I didn't trust him? Yes. But that's almost funny. The truth was, I wouldn't have trusted any man who presumed to claim my darling, my favorite one, my Ilsa. I found a picture of Malone before I found the one of them together, but I told myself I didn't want the solo shot. That one wouldn't do me any good. If I wanted to know his intentions toward my daughter, I had to touch them as a couple, with my magic hand. I was already making assumptions, you see. Bad ones. If I had touched the first one, really searched the first one, Carson Jones dressed in his twins t-shirt, Carson alone, things might have been different. I might have sensed his essential harmlessness. Almost certainly would have. But I ignored that one. And I never asked myself why, if he was a danger to her. I had then drawn her alone, looking out at all those floating tennis balls. Because the little girl in the tennis dress was her, of course. Almost all the girls I drew and painted during my time on Duma Key were. Even the ones that masqueraded as Reba or Libet or, in one case, as Adriana. There was only one female exception. The red robe. Her. When I touched the photograph of Ilsa and her boyfriend, I had sensed death. I didn't admit it to myself at the time, but it was true. My missing hand sensed death, impending like rain and clouds. I assumed Carson Jones meant my daughter harm, and that was why I wanted her to stay away from him. But he was never the problem. Percy wanted to make me stop. Was, I think, desperate to make me stop once I found Libet's old drawings and pencils. But Carson Jones was never Percy's weapon. Even poor Tom Riley was only a stopgap, a make-do. The picture was there, but I had made a wrong assumption and missed the truth. The death I felt wasn't coming from him. It was hanging over her. And part of me must have known I missed it. Why else had I drawn those damn tennis balls?
16. The end of the game. 1. Wireman offered Lunesta to help me sleep. I was sorely tempted but declined. I took one of the silver harpoons, however, and Wireman did likewise. With his hairy belly sloping slightly over his blue boxers and one of John Eastlake's specialty items in his right hand, he looked like some amusing real-guy version of Cupid. The wind had gotten up even higher. It roared along the sides of the house and whistled around the corners. "Bedroom door's open, right?" he asked. "Check. And if something happens in the night, holler like hell." "Roger that, Houston. You do the same."
"Is Jack going to be all right, Edgar?"
"If he burns the sketch, he'll be fine."
"You doing okay with what happened to your friends?"
"Cayman, who taught me to think sideways. Tom, who had told me not to give up the home field advantage. Was I doing okay with what happened to my friends?" "Well, yes and no. I felt sad and stunned, but I'd be a liar if I didn't say I also felt a certain low and slinking relief. Humans are, in some ways, such complete shits. Because Cayman and Tom, although close, stood just outside the charmed circle of those who really mattered to me. Those people Percy hadn't been able to touch. And if we moved fast, Cayman and Tom would be our only casualties."
"Muchacho?"
"Yeah," I said, feeling called back from a great distance.
"Yeah, I'm okay. Call me if you need me, Wireman.
And don't hesitate. I don't expect to get many winks."
2. I lay looking up at the ceiling with the silver harpoon beside me on the table. I listened to the steady rush of the wind and the steady tumble of the surf. I remember thinking, "This is going to be a long night." Then sleep took me. I dreamed of little Libet's sisters, not the big meanies, the twins. The twins were running. The big boy was chasing them. It had teeth.
3. I woke with most of my body on the floor, but one leg, my left, still propped on the bed and fast asleep. Outside, the wind and surf continued to roar. Inside, my heart was pounding almost as hard as the waves breaking on the beach. I could still see Tessie going down, drowning while those soft and implacable hands clasped her calves. It was perfectly clear, a hellish painting inside my head. But it wasn't the dream of the little girls fleeing the frog thing that was making my heart pound. Not the dream that caused me to wake up on the floor with my mouth tasting like copper and every nerve seeming to burn. It was rather the way you wake from a bad dream realizing that you forgot something important, to turn off the stove, for instance, and now the house is filled with the smell of gas. I pulled my foot off the bed and it hit the floor in a burst of pins and needles. I rubbed it, grimacing. At first it was like rubbing a block of wood, but then that numb sensation started to leave. The sensation that I'd forgotten something vital did not. But what? I had some hopes that our expedition to the south end of the key might put an end to the whole nasty, festering business. The biggest hurdle, after all, was belief itself. And as long as we didn't backslide in the bright Florida sunshine tomorrow, we were over that one. It was possible we might see upside-down birds, or that a gigantic hop-frog monstrosity like the one in my dream might try to bar our way. But I had an idea those were essentially wraiths, excellent for dealing with 6-year-old girls, not so good against grown men, especially when armed with silver-tipped harpoons. And, of course, I would have my pad and pencils. I thought Percy was now afraid of me and my newfound talent. Alone, still not recovered from my near-death experience, still suicidal, in fact, I might have been an asset instead of a problem. Because in spite of all his big talk, that Edgar Freemantle really hadn't had another life. That Edgar had just switched the backdrop of his invalid's existence from pines to palms. But once I had friends again, saw what was all around me and reached out to it, then I'd become dangerous. I don't know exactly what she had in mind, other than regaining her place in the world, that is. But she must have thought that when it came to mischief-making, the potential for a talented one-armed artist was great. I could have sent poison paintings all over the globe, by God. But now I had turned in her hand, just as Libet had. Now I was something first to be stopped, then discarded. "You're a little late for that, bitch," I whispered. So why did I still smell gas? The paintings, especially the most dangerous ones, the Girl and Ship series, were safely under lock and key, and off-island, just as Elizabeth had wished. According to Pam, nobody in our circle of family and friends had taken sketches except for Bosey, Tom, and Xander Kamen. It was too late for Tom and Kamen, and I'd have given a great deal to change that, but Bosey had promised to burn his, so that was all right. Even Jack was covered because he'd owned up to his little act of thievery. It had been smart of Wireman to ask him, I thought. I was only surprised he hadn't asked if I'd given Jack some artwork myself. My breath turned to glass in my throat. Now I knew what I'd forgotten. Now, in this deep crease of the night with the wind roaring outside, I'd been so fixated on the goddamn show that I'd never thought much about who I might have given work to before the show. Can I have it? My memory, still apt to be so balky, sometimes surprised me with bursts of technicolor brilliance. It provided one now. I saw Ilsa standing barefoot in little pink, dressed in shorts and a shell top. She was standing by my easel. I had to ask her to move so I could see the picture she was so taken with. The picture I didn't even remember doing. Can I have it? When she stood aside, I saw a little girl in a tennis dress. Her back was turned, but she was the focus of the picture. The red hair marked her as Reba, my little love, that girlfriend from my other life. Yet she was also Ilsa, rowboat Ilsa, and Elizabeth's big sister Adriana as well, for that was Addie's tennis dress, the one with the fine blue loops along the hem. I couldn't know this, but I did. It was news that it had come whispering up from Elizabeth's pictures, pictures done when she was still known as Libet. Can I have it? This is the one I want. Or the one something wanted her to want. I tried Ilsa, Pam had said. I wasn't sure I'd reach her, but she just got in. All around the doll girl's feet were tennis balls. Others floated shoreward on the mild waves. She sounded tired, but she's okay. Was she? Was she really? I had given her that damn picture. She was my Miss Cookie, and I could refuse her nothing. I'd even named it for her, because she said artists had to name their pictures. The end of the game, I told her. And now that clanged in my head like a bell. 4. There was no phone extension in the guest bedroom, so I crept out into the hall with my silver harpoon clutched in one hand. In spite of my need to get through to Ilsa as soon as possible, I took a moment to peer in through the open doorway across the hall. Wireman was lying on his back like a beached whale, snoring peacefully. His own silver harpoon was beside him, along with a glass of water. I went past the family portrait, down the stairs and into the kitchen. Here, the rush of the wind and the roar of the surf was louder than ever. I picked up the phone and heard nothing. Of course, did you think Percy would neglect the phones? Then I looked at the handset and saw buttons for two lines. In the kitchen, at least, just picking up the phone wasn't enough. I said a little prayer under my breath, pushed the button marked line one, and was rewarded with a dial tone. I moved my thumb to the button, then realized I couldn't remember Ilse's telephone number. My address book was back at Big Pink, and her telephone number had gone entirely out of my head. 5. The phone began to make a sirening sound. It was small. I had laid the handset down on the counter, but it seemed loud in the shadowy kitchen, and it made me think of bad things. Police cars responding to acts of violence. Ambulances rushing to the scenes of accidents. I pushed the cutoff button, then leaned my head against the chilly brushed steel front of El Palacio's big refrigerator. In front of me was a magnet reading, "Fat is the new thin." Right. And dead was the new alive. Next to the magnet was a magnetized pad holder and a stub of pencil on a string. I pushed the line one button again and dialed 411. The automated operator welcomed me to Verizon Directory Assistance and asked me for city and state. I said, "Providence, Rhode Island," enunciating as though on stage. So far, so good. But the robot choked on Ilsa, no matter how carefully I enunciated. It rolled me over to a human operator, who checked and told me what I had already suspected. Ilsa's number was unpublished. I told the operator I was calling my daughter, and the call was important. The operator said I could talk to a supervisor who would probably be willing to make an inquiry call on my behalf, but not until 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I looked at the clock on the microwave. It was 2:04. I hung up and closed my eyes. I could wake up Wireman, see if he had Ilsa in his little red address book. But I had a gnawing intuition even that might take too long. "I can do this," I said, but with no real hope. "Of course you can," Kamen said. "What is your weight?" It was 174, up from an all-time adult low of 150. I saw these numbers in my mind, 174-150. The numbers were red. Then five of them turned green, one after the other. Without opening my eyes, I seized the stub of the pencil and wrote them on the pad. 40175. "And what is your social security number?" Kamen inquired further. It appeared in darkness, bright red numbers. Four of them turned green, and I added them to what I had already scrawled. When I opened my eyes, I had printed 40175982. In a drunken, downward-tending sprawl on the pad. It was right. I recognized it, but I was still missing a number. "It doesn't matter," the Cayman inside my head told me. "Keypad phones are an amazing gift to the memory challenged. If you clear your mind and punch what you already have, you'll hit the last number with no problem. It's muscle memory." Hoping he was right, I opened line one again and punched in the area code for Rhode Island. Then hit 759-082. My finger never hesitated. It punched the last number, and somewhere in Providence, a phone began to ring. 6.
"Hello? Who is it?"
For a moment, I was sure I'd blown the number after all. The voice was female, but sounded older than my daughter. Much. And medicated. But I resisted my initial impulse to say wrong number and hang up. She sounded tired, Pam had said, but if this was Ilsa, she sounded more than tired. She sounded weary unto death.
Ilsa?
No answer for a long time. I began to think the disembodied someone in Providence had hung up. I realized I was sweating, and heavily enough so I could smell myself like a monkey on a branch. Then the same little refrain.
"Hello? Who is it?"
Ilsa. Nothing. I sensed her getting ready to hang up. Outside, the wind was roaring and the surf was pounding. Miss Cookie, I shouted. Miss Cookie, don't you dare hang up this phone. That got through.
Daddy?
There was a world of wonder in that broken word. Yeah, honey, Dad.
If you're really Daddy.
A long pause. I could see her in her own kitchen, barefoot, as she had been that day in Little Pink, looking at the picture of the doll and the floating tennis balls, head down, hair hanging around her face, distracted, maybe almost to the point of madness. And for the first time I began to hate Percy as well as fear her. Ilsa, Miss Cookie, I want you to listen to me.
Tell me my screen name.
There was a certain shocked cunning in the voice now.
If you're really my daddy, tell me my screen name.
And if I didn't, I realized she'd hang up. Because something had been at her. Something had been fooling her, pawing her over, drawing its webs around her. Only not an it. She.
Illy's screen name.
For a moment, I couldn't remember that either. You can do this, Cayman said. But Cayman was dead.
You're not my daddy,
said the distracted girl on the other end of the line, and again she was on the verge of hanging up. Think sideways, Cayman advised calmly. Even then, I thought, without knowing why I was thinking it. Even then, even later, even now, even so.
You're not my daddy. You're her, Ilsa said. That drugged and dragging voice, so unlike her. My daddy's dead. I saw it in a dream.
If so, I shouted, not caring if I woke Wireman or not. Not even thinking about Wireman. You're if so, girl. A long pause from the other end, then.
What's the rest of it?
I had another moment of horrible blankness. Then I thought, Alicia Keys, keys on a piano. 88, I said, you're if so, girl, 88. There was a long, long pause. It seemed forever. Then she began to cry. 7.
Daddy, she said you were dead. That was the one thing I believed, not just because I dreamed it, but because Mom called and said Tom died. I dreamed you were sad and walked into the gulf. I dreamed the undertow took you and you drowned.
I didn't drown, Ilsa. I'm okay, I promise you. The story came out in fragments and bursts, interrupted by tears and digressions. It was clear to me that hearing my voice had steadied her, but not cured her. She was wandering, strangely unfixed in time. She referred to the show at the Scoto as if it had occurred at least a week ago, and interrupted herself once to tell me that a friend of hers had been arrested for cropping. This made her laugh wildly, as if she were drunk or stoned. When I asked her what cropping was, she told me it didn't matter. She said it might have been part of her dream. Now she sounded sober again. Sober, but not right. She said the she was a voice in her head, but it also came from the drains and the toilet. Wireman came in at some point during our conversation, turned on the kitchen fluorescence, and sat down at the table with his harpoon in front of him. He said nothing, only listened to my end. Ilsa said she had begun to feel strange, eerie fury, is what she actually said, from the first moment she came back into her apartment. At first it was just a spaced-out feeling, but soon she was experiencing nausea as well, the kind she had felt the day we had tried to prospect south along Duma Key's only road. It had gotten worse and worse. A woman spoke to her from the sink, told her that her father was dead. Ilsa said she'd gone out for a walk to clear her head after that, but decided to come right back. It must be those Lovecraft stories I read from my senior English project, she said. I kept thinking someone was following me, that woman. Back in the apartment, she'd started to cook some oatmeal, thinking it might settle her stomach. But the very sight of it, when it started to thicken, nauseated her. Every time she stirred it, she seemed to see things in it. Skulls, the faces of screaming children. Then a woman's face. The woman had too many eyes, Ilsa said. The woman in the oatmeal said her father was dead and her mother didn't know yet. But when she did, she would have a party. So I went and lied down, she said, unconsciously reverting to the diction of childhood. And that's when I dreamed the woman was right, and you were dead, Daddy. I thought of asking her when her mother had called, but I doubted if she'd remember, and it didn't matter anyway. But my God, hadn't Pam sensed anything wrong besides tiredness, especially in light of my phone call? Was she deaf? Surely I wasn't the only one who could hear this confusion in Ilse's voice, this weariness. But maybe she hadn't been so bad when Pam called. Percy was powerful, but that didn't mean it still didn't take her time to work, especially at a distance. Ilse, do you still have the picture I gave you? The one of the little girl and the tennis balls? The end of the game, I called it? That's another funny thing, she said. I had a sense of her trying to be coherent, the way a drunk pulled over by a traffic cop will try to sound sober. I meant to get it framed, but I didn't get around to it, so I tacked it on the wall of the big room with a pushpin. You know, the living room, kitchen. I gave you tea there.
Yes. I'd never been in her Providence apartment.
Where I could look. Look at it. But then when I came back...
Are you going to sleep? Don't go to sleep on me, Miss Cookie.
Not sleeping.
But her voice was fading. Ilse, wake up! Wake the fuck up!
Daddy!
Sounding shocked, but also fully awake again. What happened to the picture? What was different about it when you came back?
It was in the bedroom. I guess I must have moved it myself. It's even stuck on the same red pushpin, but I don't remember doing it. I guess I wanted it closer to me. Isn't that funny?
No, I didn't think it was funny.
I wouldn't want to live if you were dead, Daddy, she said. I'd want to be dead, too, as dead as a marble.
And she laughed. I thought of Wireman's daughter and did not. Listen to me carefully, Ilse. It's important that you do as I say. Will you do that?
Yes, Daddy, as long as it doesn't take too long, I'm...
The sound of a yawn.
Tired. I might be able to sleep now that I know you're all right.
Yes, she'd be able to sleep, right under the end of the game, hanging from its red pushpin. And she'd wake up thinking that that dream had been this conversation, the reality her father's suicide on Duma Key. Percy had done this, that hag, that bitch. The rage was back, just like that, as if it had never been away. But I couldn't let it fuck up my thinking. Couldn't even let it show in my voice, or Ilse might think it was aimed at her. I clamped the phone between my ear and shoulder. Then I reached out and grasped the slim chrome neck of the sink faucet. I closed my fist around it. This won't take long, hon, but you have to do it. Then you can go to sleep. Wireman sat perfectly still at the table, watching me. Outside, the surf hammered. What kind of stove do you have, Miss Cookie?
Gas stove.
She laughed again. Good. Get the picture and throw it in the oven. Then close the door and turn the oven on, high as it will go. Burn that thing.
No, Daddy.
Wide awake again and as shocked as when I'd said fuck, if not more so.
I love that picture.
I know, honey, but it's the picture that's making you feel the way you do. I started to say something else, then stopped. If it was the sketch, and it was, of course it was, then I wouldn't need to hammer it home. She'd know as well as I did. Instead of speaking, I throttled the faucet back and forth, wishing with all my heart it was that bitch hag's throat.
Daddy, do you really think?
I don't think, I know. Get the picture, Ilse. I'm going to hold the phone. Get it and stick it in the oven and burn it. Do it right now.
Okay. Hold on.
There was a clunk as the phone went down. Wireman said, is she doing it? Before I could reply, there was a snap. It was followed by a spout of cold water that drenched me to the elbow. I looked at the faucet in my hand, then at the ragged place where it had broken off. I dropped it in the sink. Water was spouting from the stump. I think she is, I said. And then, sorry.
De nada.
He dropped to his knees, opened the cupboard beneath the sink, reached in past the wastebasket and the stash of garbage bags. He turned something, and the gusher spouting from the broken faucet started to die.
You don't know your own strength, muchacho. Or maybe you do. Sorry, I said, again. But I wasn't. My palm was bleeding from a shallow cut, but I felt better. Clearer. It occurred to me that once upon a time that faucet would have been my wife's neck. No wonder she had divorced me. We sat in the kitchen and waited. The second hand on the clock above the stove made one very slow trip around the dial, started another. The water coming from the broken faucet was down to a bare rivulet. Then, very faintly, I heard Ilse calling.
I'm back. I've got it.
And she screamed. I couldn't tell if it was surprise, pain, or both. Ilse! I shouted. Ilse! Wireman stood up fast, bumping his hip against the side of the sink. He raised his open hands to me. I shook my head. Don't know. Now I could feel sweat running down my cheeks, although the kitchen wasn't particularly warm. I was wondering what to do next, who to call, when Ilse came back on the phone. She sounded exhausted. She also sounded like herself, finally like herself.
Jesus Christ in the morning, she said.
What happened? I had to restrain myself from shouting. Illy, what happened?
It's gone. It caught fire and burned. I watched it through the window. It's nothing but ashes. I have to get a Band-Aid on the back of my hand. Dad, you were right. There was something really, really wrong with it.
She laughed shakily.
Damn thing didn't want to go in. It folded itself over and...
That shaky laugh again.
I'd call it a paper cut, but it doesn't look like a paper cut. And it didn't feel like one. It feels like a bite. I think it bit me.
8. The important thing for me was that she was all right. The important thing for her was that I was. We were fine. Or so the foolish artist thought. I told her I'd call tomorrow. Illy, one more thing.
Yes, Dad?
She sounded totally awake and in charge of herself again.
Go to the stove. Is there an oven light?
Yes.
Turn it on. Tell me what you see.
You'll have to hold on then. The cordless is in the bedroom. There was another pause, shorter. Then she came back and said,
Ashes.
Good, I said.
Daddy, what about the rest of your pictures? Are they all like this one?
I'm taking care of it, honey. It's a story for another day.
All right. Thank you, Daddy. You're still my hero. I love you.
I love you, too. That was the last time we spoke, and neither of us knew. We never know, do we? At least we ended by exchanging our love. I have that. It's not much, but it's something. Others have it worse. I tell myself that on the long nights when I can't sleep. Others have it worse. 9. I slumped down across from Wireman and propped my head on my hand. I'm sweating like a pig.
Busting Miss Eastlake's sink might have had something to do with that.
I'm sorry.
Say it again and I'll smack you, he said. You did fine. It's not every man who gets to save his daughter's life. Believe me when I say that I envy you.
You want a beer? I'd throw it up all over the table. You got milk? He checked the fridge.
No milk, but we are go for half and half.
Give me a shot of that.
You are a sick, sick puppy, Dick, Edgar.
He gave me a shot of half and half in a juice glass, and I tossed it off. Then we went back upstairs, moving slowly, clutching our stubby, silver-tipped arrows like aging jungle warriors. I went back into the guest bedroom, lay down, and once more gazed up at the ceiling. My hand hurt, but that was okay. She'd cut hers, I'd cut mine. It fit somehow. The table is leaking, I thought. Drown her to sleep, I thought. And something else. Elizabeth had said something else as well. Before I could remember what it was, I remembered something much more important. Ilse had burned the end of the game in her gas oven and had suffered no more than a cut, or maybe a bite, on the back of her hand. Should have told her to disinfect that, I thought. Should disinfect mine, too. I slept, and this time there was no giant dream frog to warn me. 10. A thud woke me as the sun was rising. The wind was still up, higher than ever,
and it had blown one of Wireman's beach chairs against the side of the house. Or maybe the gay umbrella between